Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling.
I'm Jenny Prentice.
I'm Connor Orr.
And we are talking about some schedule release madness this week. We're also going to have a little bit on the Juwan James situation and maybe the tight end depth chart in Jacksonville. Depending on how things go, we'll see if we feel it by the end of the show. But we have a schedule, guys, and that's I think that qualifies as excitement in May. We know who is going to play where and when, and I don't know. There's a certain sense of completion when that happens, but. I guess we'll start with some negativity, and I'll just say flat out, this 17-game thing, it bothers me for a lot of reasons, but it especially bothers me because 16, I think I never really appreciated how sort of just the beautiful symmetry, the number 16 being half the teams in the league. It is, the square root of 16 is 4, which is a very, for those of us who are kind of, I don't know, math obsessed despite ourselves, that is a very, it's just a very even number. It just kind of all built out beautifully. So that plus the combination of having to be like, oh, I think this team's in for a big season. They're going to go 12-5, I think. It just, nothing matches up. It just feels like we are jamming the square in the children's puzzle into the triangular hole, and it's just not working.
I could not agree more, Gary. 17 is just a very unsettling number. Obviously, there's the player safety piece of this and the fact that there's still only one bye week, but it was just so easy to plot out the schedule. To if a team was playing an opponent, you knew exactly what the rest of the schedule looked like because everything has been the same for so long. And yeah, I could not be more opposed to the 17-game schedule.
See, is this going to be a weird dynamic now where, Jenny, you and I agreed on everything on the Weekside podcast, but now you're going to side with Gary and then I'm kind of just going to be lone wolfing it?
We disagree on this, right?
Wait, you like 17 is a prime number, Connor. I don't know if you knew that. It's horrible.
I'm well aware. Well, I didn't. I don't know what prime numbers are, but editor Mitch and I argued about this a while back, and player safety is 100% a concern. But I can't put away my own selfishness when it comes to this. I like football. I think this year especially, as opposed as I was to having a season go on and there were some really gross moments of what seemed like a lack of concern for everybody's safety and, you know, all that kind of stuff, it was cathartic. And, you know, at the end of the day, I was like, I think I've decided that more football in my life is good, regardless of whether or not it is actually a good product. And so 17 means like one more course on the meal. It means, you know, one more thing for me. And, you know, I know that's incredibly selfish, but I'm like, you know what? It is what it is. And I understand all the other arguments. Player safety, first and foremost, it's probably going to be a bad game anyway. The 17th yes. game is probably going to be crappy no matter what. All this stuff, totally get it. Just can't shake my own selfishness here.
I was going to say, for the guy who is demanding huge punishment for the Eagles for that Week 17 debacle, I'm just picturing Week 18 right now, and in my mind, in my very pessimistic mind, I'm picturing like 16 versions of that Washington-Eagles game that wrapped up the season. That was, I mean, it was as close to unwatchable television as you can get.
You know what we could have, though, is like you Week 18 could be Kyle Trask. You know, we could be blogging Kyle Trask. How fun would that be, huh? Or who knows? I mean, if Jimmy Garoppolo gets on a heater this year, that could be the Trey Lance debut. If Kyle Shanahan really wants to spread this thing out, I'm not ready to give up on Week 18 yet. I'm not ready. And I think the Eagles taught everybody a valuable lesson, which is that you have to try hard. So I think that all the other teams are going to start trying hard now.
I think, Connor, you are hoping for a recreation of the Patrick Mahomes Week 17 debut his rookie year, right?
Yeah.
A callback to that.
Yeah. It's very that's very wishful thinking. I agree with it. But, you know, what other kind of thinking can you traffic in at this point? Like, you know, you got to stick with wishful thinking, I think. You know, that's it. So I think week 18 is going to be magical. And Jenny, our fantasy league is going to extend an extra week. And so there's always more hope there to get our squads under control, waiver, you know, all sorts of stuff like that. So I'm pro additional football.
You know, Connor, here's another change from the Weekside podcast is that suddenly you've become very optimistic.
I was going to say,
I'm just saying.
It does it become infectious as we go on here as well? This is very sunny side right here.
We're all getting used to the new dynamic.
Yeah, we're just feeling it out. If I have to be the guy, you know, the shot of energy, you know, I'm ready to do that. Let's just give it a chance. And how about week 18? By then, hopefully, no new COVID updates and everything like that. We can have a week 18 party at my place, watch party. We can celebrate all the bustling storylines. The NFL always finds a way. You know that. There will be something to watch in week 18. They've already made sure of it. I know this. And I think that there's no way there can be one entirely trash week from start to finish.
Well, that sounds lovely, Connor. We can record the Monday morning podcast from your living room after the week 18 games. Lots of options here.
I'll make some finger foods. It'll be great.
Just people shrieking Trask repeatedly for 3 hours.
Yeah. Peter King?
I like it. So let's look at the actual schedule now that we've Jenny and I have aired our grievances and Connor has perhaps corrected us, and we'll keep an open mind going forward here. I just wish they had added two games. I just wish there's no quarter point anymore. There's no quarter point, there's no halfway point for each team. It's gonna just rack my brain for an entire season, but we'll move on. Let's look at the individual schedules. Connor, you are, let's make you turn this around. Let's ruin your morning here. And you went through the teams who should be a little bit miffed, if we're being honest, about how the schedule plays out.
Yeah, this is starting to become a death taxes. Raiders get an awful schedule. If you remember 2 years ago, they had to travel 30,000 air miles throughout the course of the season, and then the Jets and Giants combined barely reached 20. But they got the short end of the stick again. And I was looking at the Bears Raiders game, the Khalil Mack Bowl part two, which is like week five. Mm-hmm. But before that, so they start the season with Baltimore, then they go to Pittsburgh, then they get Miami, then they go to the Chargers. They could be 0-4 heading into that Khalil Mack Bowl. And then what are the optics of getting smashed by the guy that you traded away and have yet to find the, you know, replacement pass rusher to sink to 0-5? Maybe that's just my wildest dreams.
You've really gamed out this scenario here.
Yeah. but I think that those two teams, the Raiders and the Chargers both, had really bad sort of dips in the schedule. And the Raiders, so that I think that front four is really bad for the Raiders. And then after that, you have to fly across the country to the Giants. Then you get the Chiefs. Then you have to go to Dallas. Then you get Washington. Then you go to the Chiefs again. Then you go to the Browns. Then you go to Denver. And then you go to the Colts. That's brutal. Like, that's a really, really, really bad stretch of schedule there. So the beginning and end for them, it just gets hammered. I don't see a lot of ways for them to pick up wins. And then the Chargers are similar just because they're playing the same teams. But they have that really difficult schedule there really difficult part where they go to the Chiefs. Then they get the Browns. They play the Raiders. Then they get the Browns at Ravens by Patriots. So like Browns or at Ravens by Patriots is a brutal stretch too, especially like I don't think anyone wants Belichick coming off a bye because normally you'd view that as your chance to get ahead and to self scout and to come up with something new, but to have the best coach after the bye, I think kind of stinks. So I think they had a rough schedule. The Bears had a rough schedule. The Ravens had a rough schedule after an absolute cakewalk last year, and then the Lions, I think, also got hosed. The Bears are interesting just because there's going to be a lot of primetime attention, but is the team going to be good enough and where are they comfortable slotting Justin Fields in, and you know, does he start from week one? Like, you know, they start the season at LA against the Rams. Do you want to play Justin Fields in that game? I don't know. Then you come home for the Bengals, which is maybe a perfect chance to do it, but then you go to the Browns, and I don't see a lot of soft spots in that schedule. They get Tampa Bay on the road this year. They get Green Bay on the road in the winter, Seattle at the end of the season on the road, and then you close the season at Minnesota. You know, that seems like a pretty brutal schedule as well. But I will say, in general, there weren't as many clear winners and losers as there have been in the past. And with that, that extra game, I think, does is add a chance to sort of, it's just a little bit extra room to move the puzzle pieces around, where I don't see as many total destruction scenarios as we've seen in the past as well.
We have week 14 buys this year. It seems so late last year when the Bucks had week 13, the Panthers did too, but we have week 14 buys and four teams. It'll be the Colts, Dolphins, Patriots, Eagles. The Patriots are really interesting there to me, because your offense with Mac Jones is going to be completely different than your offense with Cam Newton. So if, let's say, they do go into the season with Cam as their starter, which I think is more likely, I don't think it's completely out of the realm of possibility that Mac Jones wins a quarterback competition this summer, but if they go into the season with Cam as their starter, you figure that's the kind of transition where you need the bye week to make the switch to the younger quarterback, because you need to completely redo your offense at that point. They're not going to have a chance to do that with a bye week until like the week before Christmas would be Mac Jones's first start in that scenario. And look, if Cam struggles, they'll do it anyway. They'll figure it out. But
Becoming a little overblown, though. Like, remember, even when Greg Roman was in San Francisco, they were transitioning to Kaepernick, you know, in little fits and starts throughout the first few weeks of the season. The Ravens, you know, maybe not as seamlessly, but I think had some of that stuff. Like, in training camp, they were doing a lot of zone raid stuff. Like, I think I think the Patriots will have essentially two offenses by the time, you know, ready to go, that are just sort of branched out of the same terminology. Like, I just don't think it's as crazy as it used to be. And coaches have already realized that you kind of have to have that instinct anyway. But I don't know. It wouldn't be surprising to me to see them ready to go out of camp with two offenses and be ready to pull the plug on Cam at a moment's notice.
Connor, remember when we were covering the Jets and there was a big hullabaloo because Matt Slauson in the springtime mentioned that the Jets had two playbooks, one for Sanchez and one for their newly signed quarterback, Tim Tebow.
Mm-hmm. I do remember that.
And just felt like time to mention that for no particular reason.
And we saw time. So much that playbook must have been about this thick. And for those of you who can't see my fingers, I'm holding them as close together as I can possibly hold them. Man,
like, did not materialize.
It didn't. And they didn't even like have him come in and just smash his way into the goal line from like 3 yards out. Mm-hmm. They didn't reach the goal line a lot.
Well, that's a fair point, Connor. You know, if you're never in the red zone, you don't have much cause to use your goal line offense.
And what Matt Slauson failed to mention was the third playbook run by Greg McElroy.
Greg McElroy.
Yeah.
I mean, I just had to cite that, but yes. I mean, it is a pretty, you are talking about two pretty different ends of the spectrum there, between a Cam Newton offense and a Mac Jones offense. So it will be interesting to see how the Patriots navigate that, how they prepare for that, and if and when there is a transition from one to the other, how that is executed. I think it'll be actually be really interesting to see how they do that, because you have Belichick, you have McDaniels, two people that know how to coach the game and know how to do different things on offense week to week. I mean, we always hear about how the Patriots are so game plan specific based on their opponents. So this is sort of in the same vein, just a completely different challenge.
Yeah. Would it shock you totally if there were games where Cam played a majority of the game and Mac Jones played a majority of the game throughout the season? I don't think that would surprise me very much.
Now, that's an interesting point, Connor.
You know what I mean? I think that the more that you open up that possibility, the less weird, like, it's going to seem weird at first, right? Like, who's starting this week? Who's starting this week? But, and coaches have put such a singular focus on, like, the quarterback has to be the leader of the team. But what if you're a team that has Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels? Like, it feels like that matters less, right? Like, it's, you know, Bill Belichick has a handle on everything. So it's like, whoever's starting this week is who I say it's going to start. And it doesn't create a leadership vacuum. It's you already have the greatest leader in modern sports history. So, like, who cares? And, you know, some weeks you're going to be playing teams that are smaller defensively, maybe some, you know, I hypothetically, I'm not looking at the Patriots schedule. Like, if you had a team that was against playing in the AFC West, for example, and they had a bunch of smaller defensive backs because they're worried about the Chiefs all the time, and that's how their roster is stacked, you play Cam Newton and you run it down their throats. And if you vice versa, you know, if you have a team that's a little bit bigger, you take Mac Jones and you throw the ball a little bit more. I don't know. I mean, but it just wouldn't shock me if Belichick is the kind of guy that would get into that a little bit more.
Well, this is a really interesting possibility because, yeah, I mean, we see them with their offenses. They do whatever the opponent that week is most vulnerable to. That has always been the trick. That's why the Patriots are a very difficult team to get any fantasy football players from, because you have no idea who's going to be featured week to week. So then one week they'll feature the ground game, one week they'll feature the air game, and it's all based on the opponent's deficiencies. So what, Connor, you're suggesting is, week to week, if there's an opponent that's more vulnerable to a specific type of offense, or even at a certain point in the game. I don't know. What do you think, Gary?
I think it's really interesting because we look back on these teams that have kind of sprinkled in the new quarterback, the young guy, as we go. This is stylistically reversed. You are theoretically going to have a more expansive passing offense with Mac Jones and you are with Cam Newton, because you need to have a more expansive passing offense with Mac Jones because that running element is now gone. That is more complicated than installing, you know, saying, okay, well, we're going to mix in a package that is, you know, sort of a wildcat plus type of thing with our young, you know, sort of raw mobile quarterback. I mean, Mac Jones is the opposite. So, look, this is Mac Jones is kind of a throwback prospect anyway, and we'll see how it works out in the long run. But I don't know. I think it's really interesting the thought of trying to install sort of bits and pieces. And look, maybe Mac Jones at this point is basically on the same level as Cam Newton. I mean, Cam, obviously, we've seen has had big years as a passer. He's been in the league for a long time, so maybe they're on the same level anyway. But I think it's interesting to think how they are going to potentially sprinkle in Mac Jones. And look, this is a team that they have coaches that solve problems. And I will be interested to see how they solve these problems. And I will be willing to just throw my takes and criticisms at them if it doesn't work.
Princeton Tigers have been doing this successfully in the Ivy League for over a decade now. So as usual, the Ivy League is the hub of innovation, and we will soon see that at the NFL level. Bill Belichick did a lot of brain picking not too long ago when I think it was Chad Knoff, Princeton had a quarterback,
yes,
that made the NFL for a hot second. I think it was Arizona. He was on the roster for Arizona maybe in the summer.
That sounds right.
Awful lot of brain picking during that meeting in Foxborough, I was told. So he's always scribbling stuff away.
That's Connor, this might be your greatest Oracle yet.
Well, for public consumption, yes. That's it could be. Yes.
Okay.
Could very well be. Yes. Yeah.
Well, Jenny very thoughtfully tried to transition us to Tim Tebow, who I guess we have to say his name. I mean, we're contractually obligated due to Google Trends and social media and all that. We have to say Tim Tebow on the show. We're going to have to do so as long as he is a member of an NFL team. But I don't know. I mean, look, he's probably not going to compete with Trevor Lawrence at quarterback. It looks like he's going to play some tight end and be this sort of, I don't know, multi-purpose type of move tight end guy. But realistically, I mean, look, it's a really thin depth chart for the Jaguars at tight end, but it's still, I mean, really difficult to picture him actually making it out of the summer and being on the roster at any point during the regular season. That said, is there a downside to having him in? Like, yes, you could bring in another 90th player on your roster, but that guy's probably not making the roster either. So does it matter that it's Tim Tebow?
I think Jenny has a better perspective on this because back when we covered the Jets, the Star Ledger only, Jenny went to the camp where Tebow was at, and then I kind of picked up afterwards. So she would have a better idea of kind of the chaos surrounding Tebow initially during the training camp period. But I would say for my own thoughts, like the 90th guy in the roster, that position has been handed out like a political appointment for years. I mean, coaches have done that, friends, how many teams have given Jim Kelly's nephew a chance with the 90th guy on the roster spot, it's probably him picking up the phone and saying, hey, can you please, bring him on here and see if you can do something with him or just get him through the summer, whatever it is. These things are not like sacrosanct. And I think it's crazy because I don't think Tim Tebow's making the 53-man roster. I don't think there's any chance. But he can do a lot of things for you in the interim. Like he can wear a lot of hats. He's going to walk around the field smiling and clapping the whole time. He's going to kind of be the evangelist for your way of coaching in the locker room. And I think it might be overrated a little bit, but I think that there are very few quarterbacks who understand what it's like to be Trevor Lawrence, and Tim Tebow is probably one of them. Like, he's not from a physical gift standpoint, but from an attention expectation mm-hmm. standpoint. And I think why not? Like, you're paying him nothing to sit in the locker room, and Trevor Lawrence is like, hey, this is crazy. There's all these creeps out there who want my autograph. And it weirds me out. And Tim Tebow is the exact guy to be like, I totally get it. I totally understand. And I'm sure there's bigger problems than that they can discuss. I don't know. But but I'm just saying, like, I think that there's a very unique fraternity of quarterbacks who have had that much pressure and attention on them. And one just happens to be willing to come to camp at age 33 and bounce himself around like a tight end for 6 weeks. Go ahead. Let him do it.
Yeah. I mean, I do think the Tim Tebow frenzy that existed previously will be lessened for a couple reasons. One, it's been a really long time. Two, he's not in the quarterback mix, and there's already a ton of excitement over Trevor Lawrence, and he's going to be the focus of anyone who visits Jacksonville. And I think Connor makes a really good point that he has that ability to mentor Lawrence in an unique way to talk about the unusual level of attention he will receive. I think for Urban Meyer, we talked a little bit about this on the Weak Side last week. He's that kind of shepherd who shows them the way of the new coach's program. We saw that with the Jets and Rex Ryan when he went out and signed Bart Scott and Jim Leonard. So a lot of coaches like to have somebody that can speak to how they've done things in the past. I will say, having been there for that Jets training camp, Connor, it was a total circus. I mean, there was national media in town. Like, I think Sal Palantonio was there for the entire camp. They had daily updates on ESPN. There was that day where they pretended to wall off the practice. Like, they had the players line up in a wall so we couldn't see the Tebow Wildcat package, which, as we mentioned earlier, really never came to fruition. There was also the day when it rained outside and Tebow took his shirt off and ran shirtless past all the photographers. And I do know that that raised a lot of eyebrows among coaches and other players. It didn't seem like a guy who was trying to lessen the attention on himself. And not to say that, a lot of players do that. It's raining, whatever. Not to say that there was any ill intent there, but knowing the commotion that surrounded him, that seemed to play into it.
This is going to sound incredibly naive, but the shirt thing was on purpose? Like, popping it off and running past the cameras was like a calculated...
Well, I don't know if it was calculated or not. That's how it happened.
But it was perceived as calculated.
Well, I think some coaches and players on the team were like, what's going on here? Like, this is just becoming a lot. Again, I can't speak to his intent, Connor. And it probably wasn't an intent, although there is a sort of, there's a lack of maybe understanding if there was no intent that this would, of course, blow up, which it did.
True.
So,
true.
But I, you know, I think it's a different circumstance now, and we have seen him go other places. I mean, obviously he was with the Patriots very briefly. He was with Philly very briefly. And I think each time was a little bit lessening attention. So that's probably, it's probably not going to be the same degree of focus, but it, you know, and maybe that's good though for Lawrence. Maybe if there's a bunch of hoopla around, you know, any attention that's going to Tebow is taking a tiny bit off Lawrence.
Yeah.
Although I'm skeptical that any attention will be taken off Lawrence, but.
Yeah. While you guys were working the Star Ledger, I was working at Sports Illustrated Kids a decade ago. And when Tebow was 2013 offseason, he was with the Patriots. In training camp there, and we you know, we had the daily poll on sikids.com, wonderful website, everyone should go there. We asked who should the Patriots starting quarterback be, Tom Brady or Tim Tebow, just out of curiosity, knowing people love Tim Tebow. It was the most lopsided poll we had ever put up. It was some like 94% voted for Tebow.
What?
And yeah, so I don't know if Nickelodeon wants to take it one step further with their broadcast and let kids coach by poll, set the starting lineup by poll. Maybe we'll see some more interesting games this year.
Wow.
Maybe Tebow does make some starts on the Nickelodeon broadcast.
Gary, that's a stunning piece of information.
Yes, but also no. We knew Tio would win the poll. We just didn't think it would be 94% to 6%. And also, Tom Brady had gone multiple years without even winning a Super Bowl at that point. So
yeah,
you know,
so
maybe it was time to move on
anyway. Up, yeah.
I will say this: Mike Westhoff, legendary special teams coordinator, still says Tim Tebow is the best pupil that he ever had. Came by Mike Westhoff's office late at night asking what can I do to get on the field? And I think one time they faked a punt and it worked. So you never know.
Always the possibility there of a special teams threat. So
mm-hmm.
Lots to work with in Jacksonville training camp. Connor, maybe we should start our training camp tour there again.
Oh, let's do it. I was going to say, as long as it's not, well, I love Cortland. But they don't go there anymore. But I think that would feel too real. There'd be too much of a real feel there. But Jacksonville was a lovely spot for our training camp kickoff. So I'm totally down for that. Football's back.
It is, especially because today, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe this is day one of phase two of whatever we're calling this offseason workout phase. And you know, we're going to see over the course of the week how many players will show up, which teams will show up more than other teams, and I'm sure that will be a constant talking point that we won't really talk about because, well, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe we'll talk about it next week. But I did want to touch on specifically one guy here, and that is Juwan James, the Denver Broncos offensive tackle, and sort of what transpired. So he was working out, you know, football-related workouts, ends up rupturing his Achilles. Because he was working out away from the Broncos facility, it qualifies as a non-football injury, and the Broncos were able to essentially waive. And if you're the Broncos, you would say it as they got out from under what was probably not a great contract at that point. James was a bit of an overpay when they signed him in free agency, and, you know, they were probably, in a way, thankful to get out from under it. But as far as Juwan James goes, he loses, I believe the number's around $11 million guaranteed, and he is a free agent now, and he's 30 years old. He's trying to work his way back from a ruptured Achilles, and he's a guy who didn't play last year. He opted out during the pandemic. So I guess I just wanted to pose this. Let's just say ethically, right or wrong, what do we think the Broncos' actions here? And if they do ultimately want to move on from Juwan James and play a younger player at that spot, I think that's reasonable. But is this a little bit of, I don't know, just distasteful to ax a guy for basically preparing for the season and getting injured?
Yeah, I think J.C. Tretter, who's the president of the Players Union, had a really good point to Albert Breer in Monday Morning Quarterback that basically only a small section of the offseason is actually a part of the offseason program. And so any time that you're working away from this facility, even when there isn't a potential offseason program to attend, you're at risk for a non-football injury. And so are you essentially going to disincentivize players from working out and staying in the best shape that they can when you take this step? I mean, I think it was a confluence of a bunch of circumstances. It happened to happen during the offseason program time of year. It was a player that the Broncos were probably looking to move on from to begin with. So it resulted in this ugly outcome that people are using to kind of undercut the player's attempt to lessen the offseason requirements. But yeah, it could have happened at any other time of year. And I do think it's distasteful. I mean, of course, you know, management is going to do what they can, what's within their rights, and they seized an opportunity to get out of his contract here. But I do think it sends a bad message. And I think it does contribute to distrust between players and management, which is already kind of at an all-time high around the league.
Yeah, it's just not surprising, you know, and that's the problem is like teams are so callous and, you know, and they make these decisions. And then the problem is it kind of gives other teams cover to make these decisions. And, you know, they kind of just provide shields for one another to continue doing this sort of careless, cold stuff. And I just don't see how, from a management standpoint, I don't see how this makes your team any better. Like, yeah, you're going to save some money. Yeah, but like there's not a player that you can get this year with that money that's going to dramatically change or alter the course of your season. And the flip side of that is you could make a very public show out of pledging your ability to take care of Juwan James. And I think that the goodwill that creates in the locker room goes way further than the $10 million that you're going to save and not be able to spend, because if you're an owner, you're going to spend that money anyway. So who cares, you know?
Yeah, and I think there's an examination of this situation as a one-off without speaking to exactly what Connor just said, both on the Broncos but also teams league-wide. I mean, we're seeing players pressure management in ways we haven't seen them before. I mean, most notably with the quarterbacks, obviously, and we'll see how that works out in certain situations. But maybe this is the best decision for them. The Broncos feel like this is the best decision for them and their salary cap in the moment, but it may have consequences down the line when you further fray the relationship between players and management. It might show up in a lot of other ways. And so I think they're probably not thinking of the long-term effects that has when you see a player get screwed out of this, especially on an issue that players league-wide are trying to activate on. Now, maybe the participation in the action that they were trying to take isn't as, you know, the percentage isn't as high as maybe you'd like it to be. And we've seen some teams put out statements that they're not going to work out programs or some players on and various teams putting out those statements, but then going anyway. But this is an issue that players are going to push back on. And I don't think the Broncos management is considering the fact that taking this stand based on whatever is allowed contractually, I don't think they're thinking that this could have a much worse impact in the long term in the bigger picture.
Yeah, in a way, on the James situation, I'm almost open to there's a salary cap impact, and that's part of the game, part of football, where, you know, like, oh, okay, well, we can now free up this money and do A, B, or C with it, and I understand that. And I don't want to sit here and say that $10 million isn't a lot of money, even for a very wealthy organization. It is, but maybe you just pay that. You were planning on paying it anyway, and if you got hurt at your facility, you would have paid it. So, I think there is an opportunity for sort of goodwill at this point. If they don't take it, we'll see. We'll see how it affects prospective free agents going forward there. If it's sort of a coin toss situation between the Broncos and another organization, do you end up going elsewhere? But I guess overall, the whole offseason workout thing, it's just fascinating to me, because on one hand, owners don't care. Like, they really don't. This doesn't cost them money. It's not a financial issue, and therefore, if they can sort of give away some of these things to players, and they're not negotiating the CBA right now. They already did that last year, and we heard all about it. But this is not something where it's hurting them financially. So they really, this is not a priority for them. But the coaches kind of get caught in the middle of it, because you're basically like, you're management, but you're not really management for the sake of, you know, NFL ownership versus NFLPA. And they obviously, they want these guys showing up and getting ready for the season and all that stuff. And it just, they're in this weird middle ground. And I just find it fascinating.
Yeah. And they are in a strange spot too for the players to be organizing around this issue, as you said, Gary, because they just struck a CBA last year. So it's not like they're in the middle of contract negotiations and this is something that they're going to address for the next period. I think everything comes down to management control. They want control over players. Because as you said, otherwise, I mean, it's not a money issue. It's not something that hits the owner's bottom lines, but I think they want control over players. And also they know that it's important to the coaches. So because there is the CBA that's in place and is not getting renegotiated, we have seen players work with the coaches to come up with team to team different ways around it. So Brian Flores and the Dolphins, Cliff Kingsbury and the Cardinals, seems like they have come up with other arrangements just on a one-off basis between the coach and the players. And perhaps that's something that we see a little bit more of league-wide. But it is always this awkward thing. It's, nothing is ever voluntary. And you know, the players have been pushing for less off-season for a long time. But I think last year, having seen that a virtual off-season program works just fine, now this issue is, you know, even clearer in the players' minds. The problem is they're currently locked into a CBA. That's my unionist talk for the day.
Yeah.
It is. kind of set everyone straight. No one has anything to add on to that because Jenny already knows it better than us.
It's so true, though.
Could say that about a lot of topics.
I know. I was going to add that as well.
we'll figure that out as we go on.
Jenny,
with this,
over
with
the last
lineup.
10 years, Jenny has fixed life issues of mine, medical issues of mine, countless work-related issues. Like, I'm not joking. Jenny once gave me advice for chronic stomach aches. I have not had a stomach ache since then. It's been 3 years. That's crazy.
Well, we're really overstating my impact.
I've had a
here.
Stomach ache in 3 years.
Well, just make sure that Shelby doesn't go in the archives and put together a reel of all of my bad takes. So we're trusting Shelby not to do so.
All right, guys, you have the finale of the Weekside podcast coming up this week. So you folks out there, if you missed it if you didn't subscribe, you blew it. Nothing else to be said at this point, but do make sure you go and listen to that show. It's going to be an all-timer there. I do want to throw out, it's that time of year on the NFL calendar where we want mailbag questions. So you can send your questions. You can send it via social media. You can tweet at us. We're all on Twitter. I mean, you guys all know how to use that stuff. If you want to email it, let's say do the mmqb@gmail.com for now and put podcast in the subject line, and we'll come up with a new email address or something like that, because as Connor has pointed out, that email is I don't know, a lot of people have access to it. I don't know who has access to it these days, but just know that some random former MMQB employee might see your question.
Love it.
That's it. That's my warning. That's the disclaimer. Send those questions in, and we'll see you guys next week. The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Jenny Vrentis, Connor Orr, and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royson. SI's executive producer for podcasts is Scott Brody. Mark Ravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed as well as the feeds for the Weekside Podcast and Albert Breer Show. They're wrapping up this week, but you got to check them out before they go away. They're all for free on Apple Podcasts. And once you do subscribe, please leave a rating and review for this show and for all of them. It helps other people find the shows. They're also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.